Are you a fan of Movie Geeks United and wonder how you can show your support? Consider making a donation to help keep the show going strong. Donate as much or as little as you'd like. We've even made it possible for you to schedule recurring donations on a monthly basis. Help us keep providing the great thought-provoking content and filmmaker interviews you've come to love. Visit our website at moviegeeksunited.net to find out how you can become a Movie Geeks United supporter. Want to listen to the latest movie books, including this year's Oscar-nominated The Wolf of Wall Street? Movie Geeks United has teamed up with Audible.com, the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the Internet, to make you a movie insider. Choose the audio versions of your favorite books with a library of over 150,000 titles to choose from. You can purchase them individually, or for real savings, you can sign up for an Audible listener program, which gives you book credits each month for a low monthly fee. Download your choices and access them on your PC, burn them onto CDs, or upload them to iPods or other MP3 devices. It's quick, easy, fun, and affordable entertainment, and it's all yours if you go to audibletrial.com/moviegeeksunited. Tuning into this episode of the Movie Geeks United Oscar Nominee Interview Series 2014. Tonight, we speak with Joel Harlow, who's nominated in the category of Best Achievement in Makeup for his stunning work in The Lone Ranger. Mr. Harlow won an Oscar previously for his contributions to J.J. Abrams' Star Trek in 2009. Other credits on his resume include Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, and At World's End, Alice in Wonderland, Dark Shadows, and Inception. What does this feel like, this whole period leading up to the big ceremony for you?
The second that you find out, you know, that you're one of those lucky few that are actually nominated for an Academy Award, I mean, it's surreal. I have been here before once, and it was surreal then, and, you know, it doesn't get any less so, you know, being here again. You know, it's a tremendous honor, and you know, I guess the days leading up to it are, you know, you're nervous, and, you know, you're incredibly honored, and you're proud, and, you know, you just want to make sure that, or at least me, I want to make sure that, you know, my crew is acknowledged, you know, because no man is an island, and, you know, certainly this film would not have been made without the help of a very talented, you know, makeup and hair department.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that there is a, because I've spoken to various creative people, from cinematographers and so on, about this, do you feel like there's a sense of community among makeup artists in the industry?
There is, yes. You know, we're all creative types, and, you know, that creativity can run the range from, you know, beauty and corrective makeup all the way to prosthetics and, you know, character makeup, even creature makeup. So yeah, it's absolutely, there's a sense of community. You know, we all sort of run in the same circles, and, you know, though you may be in charge of a film, you know, this time around, you know, the next time around, you may be working for your friends, you know, mm-hmm. and they work for you, you know, so vice versa.
Tell me about the luncheon. Did you attend that the other day?
I did, yeah, I did. Yeah, the luncheon is fantastic. I mean, because you're there with, you know, with directors and writers and producers and actors and, you know, everybody, you know, across the spectrum of filmmaking, you know, who are all being honored for this, you know, their achievement in, you know, whatever film that, you know, they happen to have worked on that year. So, I mean, it's, you know, it, just to make it, you know, to one of the, you know, one of the nominees, I mean, it's, you feel like you've already sort of, you know, sort of won. I mean, because out of every film that comes out during the year, you know, to make it this far, it's like, you know, it's a huge honor.
Sure, yeah. So tell me, I want to talk about your work on The Lone Ranger, but first of all, take me back a little bit. Tell me what inspired you to become involved in makeup to begin with.
That would have been King Kong, the original King Kong, Willis O'Brien, black and white, stop motion animated King Kong. My father brought me to see that, and I knew after seeing it that I wanted to do something, you know, that related to that kind of magic, that kind of like seeing a character or a creature or, you know, this personality that clearly was not human live. Mm-hmm. You know, so what I ultimately did is I went to the New York School of Visual Arts for animation. You know, I enrolled in the animation program because at the time there were really no, you know, no makeup schools. I mean, now you can drive down any street in Los Angeles and hit at least five. But, you know, when I started, there were not. You know, there was the Dick Smith course, and, you know, he is the godfather of modern makeup techniques. And that was basically it. You know, you learn from him, and he was, of course, very free with the information, so it made it much easier. Ultimately, you know, what I did is I dropped out of, you know, the animation program and just started pursuing, you know, makeup in film and television.
You know, I think about makeup, and I think about the Universal horror movies back in the 40s, and the, you know, you mentioned Dick Smith and things like The Exorcist and Little Big Man and all of those kind of milestones in makeup. But with the progression of technology and digital effects and all of that, does makeup still hold the level of romance for you?
Even more so. Yeah, even more so. Because, I mean, as I, you know, I keep working in this field and, you know, I keep doing, I do makeup, you know, elaborate makeups for, I'll do it for anything. You know, I just did one, you know, this very elaborate, you know, silicone prosthetic makeup for a convention. You know, no money involved. I just did it because I loved it. You know, and I continue to do that. I'll do seminars at some of the schools that exist now, because I love it. You know, we don't get paid for it. I just do it because I'm fortunate enough now that if I can think of a character or a creature or what have you, chances are good that I can, you know, I've come, you know, with my skills far enough that I can create it. And if I can create it, then why shouldn't I? You know, so no matter if I'm making a living at it or not, I'm always going to, you know, to you know, be working in makeup and doing makeup, building makeup, supplying them. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the romance of the makeup for me is even stronger now because I know that I can create what I'm imagining.
Right. There's such power in relying on practical effects and things in films, and I was curious if the digital world ever intrudes upon the art of what you do.
There are aspects of the digital world certainly that intrude on, you know, the makeup world, you know, especially the makeup effects world, because the digital, you know, visual effects have gotten so savvy these days that there, you know, it's easy for a producer, director, writer to imagine something and just sort of throw it to visual effects without even opting to go down a practical effects road, which is a little sad because, you know, when you go down a practical effects road, you discover things along the way that maybe weren't intended. I like to call those happy accidents. And
right.
Going a visual road, you know, a visual effects road, those happy accidents will never be discovered because, you know, it's all generated inside, you know, there's no randomness because it's generated inside the computer. You know, not saying that I'm opposed to visual effects at all. I mean, I think there can be a wonderful marriage between visual effects and makeup effects or prosthetic makeup, you know, what have you. I mean, certainly makeup is an additive art. So to really say you wanted to emaciate somebody, you could suggest that by, you know, increasing cheekbones, increasing, you know, the skeletal structure. But what you're doing ultimately is cheating at. You're adding bulk on top of an existing form. Visual effects allows us the ability to actually compress that form. You know, so, I mean, there, you know, and, you know, visual effects have done some amazing, you know, amazing work, you know. But again, it depends on who the artist is, you know. It's not, you know, across the board. I wouldn't say, yeah, visual effects, you know, all the way. It depends on, you know, who the technicians or the artists are that, you know, are wielding the pixels.
Right. And I guess the happiest marriage is when they can complement one another instead of competing.
Exactly. And where there's, yeah, where there's a mutual respect and, you know, there's not a, you know, a sort of rivalry to get this shot is, you know, this shot is going to be ours and this shot is going to be yours and try to get, you know, the entirety of, you know, a character, you know, ultimately we're both here to serve the same end, which is to make for a better movie experience. And if, you know, if visual effects will serve, you know, the outcome better, I am more than happy to say, okay, this should absolutely be a visual effect. If there's an element of that that can be a practical makeup effect, I'll absolutely say, you know what, maybe we should do this and we can augment it digitally with that and whatever.
When you first started breaking into the business, were there mentors that guided you along the way? And if there were, what were some specific lessons you learned from them?
Well, you know what? Everybody I work with, I take something away from. You know, even now, you know, there are artists out there that are far better than I am, you know, at sculpture or painting or what have you. So everybody, you know, everybody that I work with, that I have worked with, I try to learn as much from them as, you know, maybe hopefully they're getting from me, you know, even if I happen to be the guy in charge. It's like, just because I'm the guy in charge does not mean I'm the best one to do every job, you know. So, as far as mentors, you know, I worked for Steve Johnson, you know, who had a company called XFX for about 8 years. And the talent and artistry of the makeup artist that came through that shop was staggering. I mean, we were doing some things, you know, under Steve's company banner that, you know, have never been seen and, unfortunately, now will never be seen, but were really, truly amazing things. And they happen right before your eyes.
I know that you've worked consistently in recent years with Johnny Depp. And when I think about Johnny Depp, I mean, my perspective is that he, when he's building a character, he takes influences from various sources and kind of, it feels like he kind of puts it in a pot and makes it his own thing. Do you feel like that creatively when you're working with him, that you're doing that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Johnny is brilliant, and there's, you know, nobody, you know, I've said this before and I'll continue to say it, there's nobody of our generation that changes themselves so radically and so consistently with makeup as he does. You know, he will do whatever it takes to achieve the character, you know, whether it's uncomfortable, you know, like old Tonto 8-hour makeup process, you know, which, you know, I wouldn't wish upon him, but unfortunately that's what it needed to be. And he was great with it, you know, he embraces makeup. And creating makeups, creating characters, creating looks with him it's very liberating because I know that I don't have to hold back. I know that I don't have to say, okay, well, you know, let's, you know, he wants to be out of the chair in 10 minutes, so we have to, you know, we have to lose this and lose this and, you know, sort of homogenize the thing. No, we, quite the opposite. We can, you know, we'll take as long as it takes and do whatever it takes to make the character perfect. And that, you know, as an artist, there's nothing better than that. There's nothing better than having the chains taken off and the restraints taken off. And, you know, the avenue opened up so you can just be creative and create art, you know, moving art on him.
Yeah. Well, what was the process for crafting the look for Tonto? Because that's a really unique look for that character that really pops. I mean, it's very memorable and striking.
Exactly, and I think that was part of it. But the, you know, the sort of the genesis of that character happened on Rum Diary in 2009. I was the department head of that film, so I was pulling images that I had printed from the internet and laying them out in the trailer. And one of these images, this was for a carnival sequence. One of these images was this Kirby Sadler painting entitled I Am Crow. And the painting was basically the Tonto look. It was sort of the white, you know, pale face with the black streaks down the sides. And then a bird that was most likely flying right behind this Native American gentleman's head, but the illusion was is that it was perched on top of his head, which, you know, wasn't uncommon, you know, amongst certain tribes. So Johnny saw this image and he was like, you know what, let's hold off on using this for the carnival sequence. This might be a good, interesting look for Tonto. At which point I said, well, do you want to, you know, we can test it. Let's test it on a weekend. And he was up for that, so we, you know, I sculpted up some prosthetics. We had a bird made and, you know, wigs sent out, and we tested it one weekend in Puerto Rico, and it was photographed by Peter Mountain, who was the set photographer and a good friend of Johnny's. And those images basically kick-started the movie again. So, I mean, which for me was amazing because I had never been in sort of on the ground floor of actually being involved in creating a makeup that started, you know, that fast-tracked a movie, you know, that basically greenlit a movie.
The two of you craft this look, but there's also the obstacle of making sure it reads as well as it should on film.
Right.
So once you start to test it, I would imagine there were probably adjustments that you had to make.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I spoke to our Comanche consultant, and what he told me is that the sort of pale mud color would have been, you know, clay from a river bottom. So I decided I wanted to make it more dimensional because the initial test, it was done with color and color only. This time I wanted to use prosthetics to create this cracked earth effect. Rather than going a traditional route, I mean, any woman out there who has done a mud mask on themselves knows that you smear this clay substance on, and as it dries, it starts to crack, and if you move around too much, it starts to fall off. That is the look I wanted, but it would have been a continuity nightmare trying to preserve, you know, this cracked look without it all, you know, falling off in 110-degree weather, you know what I mean? So I opted to go with prosthetics. I mean, those are all prosthetics on his face. There's not any clay. I sculpted the cracks into it to give it the illusion that it was dry earth. And ultimately what we ended up doing was seven prosthetics on his face and another four on his body. And then we had to figure out a way to keep the bird attached to his head, you know, while he's on top of, you know, a train car moving 40 miles an hour. I mean, a bird with its wings outspread, that is designed for flight, and certainly we didn't want that to happen, so... You know, I came up with a vacuform skull cap idea that had a couple of nylon bolts in it, you know, and this bird kind of threaded down on top of it and was bolted to the top of his head, which allowed us to change out the bird. It allowed us to take the bird off entirely, leaving nothing but scalp underneath, you know, nothing but the wig, which plays in a couple of sequences when he comes out of the water and once when he's the old version of Tonto. But yeah, I mean, just that one character was, a monumental challenge, and then we shot for 153 days.
And you said the makeup process was something like 8 hours a day?
No, the makeup process for old Tonto was 8 hours a day.
Wow.
He's got, Johnny has two looks. He's got the old Tonto
right.
Look, and then he's got the Tonto that you see, throughout the entirety of the movie, the young Tonto look. Yeah, the old Tonto look, that shot about five times with a few more days of insert arms and, over-the-shoulder shots, that kind of thing. But, yeah, that was an eight-hour makeup process and another two-hour removal on top of that because it was full-body prosthetics.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time when you're dealing with an age makeup, you're dealing with head and shoulders and maybe hands. This, and you can hide things under wardrobe. This, it was all out there. There was nowhere to hide anything. Nowhere to hide edges, nowhere to hide, where pieces came together, nothing. It was all out there.
Wow. I was talking a few years ago, I was talking to the gentleman that did the makeup for Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight, and we were talking about the kind of excitement of witnessing the actor transform while they're in the chair. I mean, they kind of sink into that character. You can feel it as you're applying the makeup. I mean, do you find that that's the case for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it is pretty magical to see the makeup live. I mean, because the makeup is really, it's just that. It's makeup, and it doesn't become its full potential until, in this case, Johnny brings it to life, and I've seen makeups, that were beautifully executed, beautifully sculpted, completely fail because the person wearing the makeup wasn't acting through it, was letting the makeup affect their performance, and you absolutely cannot have that because nothing says makeup more than, than somebody who won't believe that that's their skin. And, with Johnny, it's never even remotely been an issue. He's always been able to bring me makeup. We've done any test makeup, any, filmed makeup, anything, bring it to life completely. And that, for me, is thrilling. It's like the Frankenstein complex. You spend, hours and hours and months in, your lab creating a makeup, sculpting it, molding it, casting it, hairing it, painting it. And then you apply it and you get to see it come to life.
I'm thinking about William Fichtner because that was such a chameleon performance. So well aided by that makeup because I did not recognize William Fichtner.
Yeah, no, he was genius. I think he is one of the iconic bad guys, of our generation now. That character is, to me, is iconic. The way that he sort of, he slithers around and, he really made that makeup sing, absolutely. And again, it would have been, would have been just a hodgepodge of colors and prosthetics without him, really embracing it. And, on this film, everybody is wearing some kind of makeup. It takes place in the 1800s, 1860. And then, there's also a sequence that takes place in 1933. So everybody in this movie has something on. There wasn't a single day where we could look at our background or anybody and say, okay, you're good enough as you are, go out there. No, everybody needed something, whether it was facial hair, sunburn, layers and layers of dirt, weathering. Everybody from deep background to our principals is wearing some kind of special makeup.
I wanted to ask you about your collaboration or your level of communication with the cinematographer because I'm thinking about Dark Shadows, which I believe is shot by Bruno Delbonnel, does such beautiful work, but his work has to complement the very specific skin tone you gave the characters in that movie. So
right.
What is that communication like?
Oh, it's. I mean, it's. You know, it's very close. You know, I had a monitor that was calibrated to Bruno and Tim's monitor, so I could see what the desaturation process was going to look like. Because I mean, you know, you can make somebody up in the trailer and they look great, and then you know, they're shot under you know whatever lighting situation it happens to be. And that's not where it ends. Then it goes to the lab and it gets desaturated or colors get amplified, whatever it is. Then you're looking at a completely different makeup. So in order to keep everything correct, you know, for all of us, I needed to be able to communicate freely with Bruno and, you know, and see what he was going for. And, you know, I mean, he's brilliant. You know, and you know, fortunately, I had a monitor that replicated, you know, their monitor, so I could, you know, adjust according to what I was seeing on the screen rather than what I was seeing in, you know, in the real world.
And with something like Alice in Wonderland or Dark Shadows, I mean, Tim Burton is such a daring visualist. Which I would imagine would give you such a sense of freedom. Is there ever a danger of going too far?
I don't believe in going too far. I don't think it's possible. You know, I go as far as I can until somebody reels me in. I like visual excitement. You know, I like, you know, I'll keep pushing a character, you know, and to sort of my aesthetic until somebody says, okay, well, let's dial this back, you know, whatever percentage it is. And, you know, then, you know, no film is made by one person. So, you know, there's a lot of different inputs and a lot of different opinions on, you know, sort of what characters should look like. And, you know, being a professional, you know, and this is, you know, we're in a service industry. You know, you don't always, you know, get to achieve what you set out to achieve. But, you know, fortunately, working with Johnny, you know, 99% of the time we achieve exactly what we're going for.
Well, your work is stunning, and I was so excited to talk to you about it tonight. I really appreciate you giving me an opportunity to do so, and I wish you the very best on Oscar night.
Thank you so much. It's great. I mean, I get to, you know, I just got engaged, so I get to bring my fiance. And, you know, last time
awesome.
I got to bring my, she's really excited, as am I. Last time I brought my parents and, you know, they got to, you know, see the Academy Awards and then see their son, you know, win. And they actually have the award. I gave it to them for destroying their house when I was younger.
Yeah.
I destroyed my mom's kitchen. I destroyed my dad's library. You know, I figured it's the least I could do. So,
but
you know,
it all paid
they
off.
Supported me. Yeah, exactly. They supported me in this crazy business, and you know, let me follow my crazy dreams. So, you know, it's only appropriate that they have it on their mind.